Over the next several months, hundreds of raids were conducted, and over 10,000 Iraqis were detained, many of them hauled away from their families in the middle of the night and held without any notification to those families for weeks. All told, in the first 18 months of the occupation, some 30,000 to 40,000 Iraqis would pass through U.S. detention facilities, according to a legal statement given by General Sanchez. By the end of September, Abu Ghraib held more than 3,500 prisoners. A month later, that number had almost doubled, but there were still only 360 MPs to guard them, Karpinski said. The huge effort in the late summer and fall of 2003 led directly to the widespread abuses of prisoners that came to be known, far too narrowly, as the Abu Ghraib scandal. Those thousands of prisoners eventually would overwhelm the undermanned, undertrained, under-equipped, under-supervised, and incompetent Army Reserve unit running the prison. And the tactics used in the push for intelligence aided the insurgency it was aiming to crush by alienating large segments of the Iraqi population. During this crucial period, the U.S. military seemed more concerned about its own well-being than about the Iraqis, said Lieutenant Colonel Holshek, who during the summer of 2003 was based at Talil Air Base in southern Iraq. We had all this hardware, all these riches at hand, yet we didn't do anything to help, he said of that time. An extraordinary part of the U.S. military effort was devoted to providing for itself, with a huge push to build showers, mess halls, and coffee bars, and to install amenities such as satellite television and internet cafes. At Talil, there were 11,000 people, hundreds of millions of dollars being spent, and not a goddamn thing being done for the people downtown. So, we looked like an occupation power, and we behaved like one. The message we were sending was, we didn't care much about the Iraqis, because we didn't do what we needed to do on things like electricity. And we also looked incompetent. Lieutenant Brendan O'Hearn, a platoon leader in the 82nd Airborne Division, found out he was at war in a very hard way, in a short action on a scorching hot summer day in Baghdad, when his unit was guarding a weapons amnesty collection point. It was 120 degrees out and there was no relief from the sun, he wrote in a memoir posted on companycommand.com, a semi-official website for younger Army leaders. At about 3 o'clock p.m., a volley of rocket-propelled grenades flew at his unit from a nearby house, leaving their signature trail of blue-gray smoke. Several soldiers were blown into the air. One of the rockets, still burning, lodged in a leg of Corporal Hilario Bermanis, and another soldier pulled it out with his bare hands. Another hit Specialist Gavin Naber, a 20-year-old from Somerset, Ohio, who, having finished his guard turn, was resting in a nearby bus. Back at their base, everyone was in complete shock as we had no injuries prior to all this, over almost 3 months of combat ops, including some pretty heavy stuff in the early days of the war, O'Hearn wrote. It turned worse when his company commander told him a few hours later that Specialist Naber was dead. I was blown away, he recalled. He gathered his men and told them the news. We just stood there together for a long time, with guys crying or in shock. Naber was honestly one of the best soldiers in the platoon, if not the best. He really meant a lot to everyone, and guys took it pretty hard. O'Hearn learned from the grim experience. Up until that day, what we did was little more than a live-action video game, he concluded. After it, every move I make, every plan that I put together, is now scrutinized from every angle. I have realized that I must be prepared at all times, and that the attack will come when I least expect it. There's a voice inside that senses when something's not right, and I am steadily training myself to always listen to it. When Bremer flew home to Washington for quick consultations at the end of July 2003, his message was that the situation was far better than it appeared in news coverage. When I got to Washington, this was confirmed, that the people in the United States were not getting an accurate picture of the progress we had made here, the really very substantial progress we have made here, he said later that summer in Baghdad. They were distracted, understandably, by the trickle of casualties coming in almost every day from Iraq, and not getting the stories, the other 200 good news stories, about schools reopening, hospitals opening, health clinics opening, the lowest cholera rate in a decade this year in the South, in Basra. Those stories were not getting through. In fact, the U.S. occupation was about to be confronted by a full-blown counterinsurgency. But as the United States entered its first sustained ground combat in three decades, this was his story, and he and the entire Bush administration stuck to it.